May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be holy and pleasing in your sight, O Lord, our rock and redeemer. Amen. The Apostle Peter shows up in our gospel today as an exemplary student. You could even say that he is a bit of a teacher's pet. This is not all that surprising if you take a look at the rest of the Gospel of Matthew. According to Matthew, Peter is Jesus' very first disciple. One day long before today's story unfolds, Jesus is walking alongside the Sea of Galilee, and he sees Peter and his brother Andrew off in the distance. They are casting their nets into the sea, and Jesus offers them their rare and strange opportunity to become fishers of men instead. They immediately drop their nets. That is what the gospel says. Immediately they left everything behind, and they followed after this rabbi and preacher. Now, not only is Peter among the first of those disciples, the Gospel of Matthew also shows us that he is attentive and charismatic and bold, a recognized leader among Jesus' followers, a member of the inner circle. Today, this consummate student and follower goes above and beyond. Notice how he doesn't simply ask a question. He is ready with his own answer. Lord, if another member of the church sins against me, how often should I forgive? As many as seven times? As many as seven times. Peter, of course, thinks he is being very generous. I wonder if Peter was aware that a long tradition of well-respected rabbis before his time thought that forgiving three times was generous enough, just three times. Peter, you see, is going above and beyond the expected. He is making it known that he is going above and beyond. But he has another thing coming with Jesus, that rabbi who is fond of upping the ante time and time again. Forgiveness always sounds good in theory, but it is a very hard thing to practice. Now, let's get one thing clear first. Jesus doesn't just mean that we ought to forgive 77 times. As if you kept a discrete record of wrongs in a nice tally sheet hidden somewhere in your private journal or etched carefully into the back wall of your closet. Jesus, rather, means that forgiveness should be a defining characteristic of the one who calls herself a Christ follower, a habit and practice that defines our interactions with one another. And it is on this point precisely that we come face to face with our human limitation. It is on this point precisely that Peter's ready-made answer seems much, much more manageable. What would it look like to forgive like Jesus intends for us to forgive? Forgiveness always sounds good in theory, but it is a very challenging thing to practice. Now, before I get to how Jesus forgives, it might be good for us to define what forgiveness is in the first place. And in order to do that, I find that it is best to start with what forgiveness is not. We tend to think of forgiveness, you see, as a kind of forgetting. Forgive and forget, as the saying goes. But forgiveness is actually a step in remembering things rightly, in remembering correctly. In order to truly forgive, we first have to acknowledge the harm done in the first place. It is a poor kind of forgiveness that coaxes us to pretend that the hurt someone caused us did not happen in the first place. It is a cheap version of forgiveness that allows that hurt to continue uninterrupted. Rather, to forgive implies acknowledgement of the wrong for what it is, a sin, a debt, a wrong that, if it can't be made right, must at the very least be acknowledged and interrupted. And to step into forgiveness means for the victim to reclaim their time, to take hold of a hope that seems so strange and foreign to the hurting. I will not suffer under the weight of this wrong any longer. It is no longer a burden that I want to carry. Friends, this is a very hard thing to do. I do not know your pain. I won't pretend to know when and how you should forgive. I know that for some of you, for some people who have hurt you, this task feels simply insurmountable. And I believe that we need help along the way, the compassion and kindness of friends, the intervention of a trusted counselor or spiritual advisor. But I know that some of you suffer under the weight of a wrong that is just too heavy for you to bear. And the good news of the gospel for you today, my friends, is that we believe in a God who is capable of the impossible, a God for whom forgiveness is a liberating word, not another task for you to master, a God whose way is truth, justice, and life, who knows how to forgive when we struggle with it, and who lends us his hope against hope, that word of resurrection, restoration, and life. Forgiveness is a hard thing to put into practice, but we trust in a God whose mercy knows no bounds. We have faith in the one who promises to see us through. Now, it may be that learning how to forgive is not what's on your mind today. Rather, it may be that forgiveness is something you desperately wish to receive. And here, it might be good to return to Peter, the guy who opens our story for us today. This Peter, that consummate student, the guy who knew the answer before he even asked the question, this same Peter finds himself in the same boat as you. Not long after this episode in the gospel, Peter would turn his back on his teacher and friend, denying him three times on the eve of his crucifixion, hiding and cowering in fear while his friend suffered on a cross. After him, Paul, the one who breathed threats and murder on the early Christian community, Paul would have to come to terms with his own sinful past on the road to Damascus. The saints and martyrs of the church, you see, the very people we consider to be the pinnacle of Christ-likeness, were often those most in need of forgiveness and mercy. And if you are struggling with the weight of a deed that you can't undo, or words that you can't take back, rest assured, my friend, God is merciful. And mercy isn't for those who have been good enough, those who made the mark, those who have proven that they are worthy of it. God's mercy is precisely for those whom the world deems most undeserving. That, my friends, it is the core of the gospel. You don't have to be defined by your own worst moment. There is life for you too on the other side, if you would but grab hold of it, if you would accept it. Our God is a God of second chances. And we are a people called to do likewise, not simply because it is the right thing to do, but because in each of our very own worst moments, God has already called us his own. God makes a way for reconciliation where there was once only enmity, restoration precisely when we feel most broken, loving embrace when all hope seems lost. This is the God we serve. So let us give thanks to a God of second chances, a God for whom forgiveness is the liberating way of hope and truth and life. And let us go out into the world and learn to do likewise. Amen.